This is Only a Game. I'm Karen Given.
Utah's no longer on the floor. The Thunder are no longer on its bench. The officials have gone back to the locker room. The fans here in the arena don't know what's going on. We don't know what's going on.
ESPN announcers were left in the dark when Wednesday night's Utah Jazz-Oklahoma City Thunder game was called off after Jazz center Rudy Gobert tested positive for the coronavirus. The NBA was the first major North American sport to suspend its season, and the rest of the active leagues followed suit. And that's where we're going to start this week. But first, I'm going to take a second to say, if you've had enough of the coronavirus talk, don't worry. We have some great stories coming up that do not include words like global pandemic and test kits. I'm joined by Toronto-based sports writer Shireen Ahmed via Skype and by Mike Pesca, host of the Daily Slate podcast, The Gist. Welcome back to both of you.
Hello.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Okay, Mike, you're up first.
Well, your show has never been more least aptly named than this week, Only a Game, because there are no games. NCAA tournament canceled. Major League Baseball to delay opening game. NHL suspended. All NBA. Real Madrid and Juventus also postponed. And I was having this weird feeling a day or two ago when I had come to the conclusion that this doesn't make sense and everyone has to socially distance. You could turn on the TV and watch sporting events, and it was just absolutely the wrong message. I understand you don't want to panic, but if you're in New York City and the mayor of New York and the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, is giving you all these pretty well thought out instructions to socially isolate and work from home if you can. And then when you're home and you click on the game and there's 20,000 people at Madison Square Garden, it gives absolutely the wrong message. And in fact, the Golden State Warriors refused the advice of local officials not to play a game in the crowded Chase Arena. They did so. Then they announced on Thursday they would be playing a game in an empty arena. But in the meantime, the NBA suspended all of the games. Took a little while longer for the NHL to follow suit. Broadway shut down. It all needs to come down. And sports needs to lead the way by saying, we're going to take this pause and you can too.
Shireen?
I mean, you try to find light in places that are darkness. And I mean, above the concerns that, you know, you have for general communities and people that are most vulnerable who will be affected, you know, the poor, immunocompromised, and the elderly, we have to wonder how sports plays into this. Because one of the questions that a lot of people were asking was, how is it that Rudy Gobert, who basically poked fun at all this, was so quickly tested? And that's something that most Americans don't have access to. So there's a lot of questions coming up and how this relates to sports. At the end of the day, the organizers and the men in charge are still trying to hold on to their bags of money, waiting for you Olympics to cancel or postpone. But that cash money, it's just too good to let go of.
I, for one, am not incredibly concerned that the Olympics aren't canceled yet. I mean, those games aren't slated to start until the end of July, and we've got warmer weather coming. If everybody does wash their hands and socially distance, there's still a chance that that could be okay. And organizers say they're in touch with the World Health Organization, and I am just going to trust that they're listening to people who are more knowledgeable about how diseases spread than I am. And as you mentioned, that cash money, I mean, they've already spent $6 billion on these games. I'm not surprised that they're not keen on taking a bath on that investment. But I am concerned that they haven't made any sort of public statements about what to do in the meantime, because roughly half of the athletes have already qualified. Okay, they can probably continue to train without exposing themselves to anything. But the other half of those slots are still up for grabs. Mike, have you been thinking about the Olympics and all this?
I've been thinking about the Olympics a little, but like you say, they're a little bit off in the future, and I still have, I guess you could say, hope that they will go off relatively unimpaired. I do think that with the other leagues we're talking about, it's not purely a money grab, because the players, for instance, though they have force majeure clauses in their contracts, so they don't have to get paid, say, an act of war or an epidemic, there are good relationships between the owners. It seems unlikely that the owners will withhold money. The owners themselves, most of their money comes from television contracts, and there might be some various make goods, but you could also see that them and their television partners working together so that no one really loses money. The people who would lose money are the per-game workers at the arenas, mm-hmm. you know, and they're the mm-hmm. last people who would be thought of in these situations. And also, I think there are some interesting wrinkles to this, like we thought that Kevin Durant wouldn't be available to play this year because of his injury. Well, what if the NBA season, you know, gets punted by a few weeks and he could come back in the playoffs? I just think that there can be a couple of interesting things that happen because of this that we haven't thought of that might not all be terrible.
But my only problem with that is that the NBA season is delayed. It'll cut into the WNBA, and I'm very protective of that space, as it is.
All right, I'm going to make just a sort of slight segue here because I'd like to dive a bit deeper into the NCAA's failed attempt to go ahead with March Madness without the fans. Even before the drama, before the Jazz Thunder game on Wednesday night, before Nebraska coach Fred Hoiberg left a game visibly ill, I was really perplexed by this decision. I mean, yes, on the one hand, March Madness, like the Olympics, is huge money. It accounts for more than 75% of the NCAA's yearly revenue. But first of all, this crazy plan hinged on the idea that the NCAA would somehow be able to test all of the players before every game, which is absolutely ridiculous. We have a shortage of testing kits, and I'm pretty sure that we should be using them on sick people. But beyond that, I work on the campus of a university, and I've been watching this school and many, many others cancel classes, cancel university-sponsored travel, cancel spring break service trips, and I keep asking myself if it's not a good idea to have 30 students sitting in the same classroom. Why is it okay to have 30 student athletes swapping sweat on the basketball court? Am I wrong, or was the NCAA's attempt to keep this tournament going just another example of the inherent hypocrisy in the phrase student athlete?
I absolutely agree with you, and it seems like the decision was thrust upon them. And if you look at the timeline, more reporting will come out, but it looks like certain member institutions, including Duke and Kansas, said, well, we're not going to be participating. And then you say, well, what kind of national champion are we going to actually crown? Then I started seeing a bunch of other schools saying, we're suspending all activities indefinitely. And then the NCAA made their decision. So, yes, it did seem like of all these, the NCAA was certainly not in the vanguard of doing things right compared to other cultural institutions. Compared to sports, it was a little bit lagging. Even compared to college basketball itself, the NCAA writ large wasn't a protective umbrella. It was sort of dragged along by its best members.
I completely agree. I don't think we're ever going to look to the NCAA to be sort of a stalwart in principle and integrity.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at this point, we need to look at the protection of the athletes. I'm also going to be quite honest, like, what am I going to watch? Mm. Like, I finished Parks and Rec again. What am I going to watch this year?
All right, Shireen, please take us away from the coronavirus.
Well, Karen, I know you said we weren't going to talk about a global pandemic anymore, but sexism is definitely one of them. So, my friends, U.S. soccer representative Carlos Cuadra came out and apologized. And you're wondering, why did he apologize? He apologized because the language used in a USSF filing against the U.S. women's national team players alleged that women shouldn't get equal pay because the men have, quote unquote, more responsibility. Yes, folks, the team that hasn't made the last World Cup has more responsibility. The team that has never won a world championship has more responsibility. And we're all sitting wondering, well, first of all, we're wondering if we can actually name five players of the men's team as opposed to most of the women in the starting lineup of the U.S. women's team. But the language used in this was atrocious. As I mentioned, Cuadra did apologize, but only after people started to call for his firing. And the best part of all this is this language was released, yes, on International Women's Day, because the timing of this is even more pathetic than you would think. Nonsensical is an understatement. In an interesting turn of events, some of the men's players have come out in support of the women's team, which is not something that I, who have covered this story, the suit, for a while, I mean, have ever seen this type of support from the men's team. So there always is a silver lining in that dark abyss of sexism.
Mike, where are you on this?
Walker Zimmerman. He's a man who plays for the men's team, apparently.
Well done. Yeah, did you have to look that up?
Yes, of course. Brendan Aronson. Oh. Brandon Cerviana. I have no idea. I have been reporting on that suit. And when it comes to suits, obviously the lawyers sometimes make good arguments, sometimes make bad arguments. And in this case, make really bad arguments that don't seem to have a lot of legal weight, but also can hurt the overall strategy at hand. Because the U.S. Soccer Federation has to know that even if they have a better case in the eyes of the law, even if the courts say, look, this really all comes down to this was a collectively bargained agreement. Like, it is true, legal experts that I've talked to and consulted about this says it may be true that it comes down to something as technical as that to talk about technical and skills. But the U.S. Soccer Federation also has to know the big threat isn't that they'll lose a court case. It's that the public will really go against them. So they have to argue in a way that is at least not terribly insulting to their workers, to the heroes of America. And this was incredibly insulting. It was a stupid argument to say that the women don't have skills. You could say they aren't as strong and fast because those are measurable, but that's not what skills are in the game of soccer. Yeah. The U.S. Soccer Federation should defend its legal position as forcefully as they can. But they should also realize if you win and you turn off all the fans and you make your most high profile employees hate you, have you really won?
No. And we should mention that Carlos Cordero resigned late on Thursday over this whole thing, and for good reason. I mean, earlier in the week, he apologized for the language in the brief, saying it did not reflect the values of our federation. Like, really? Did the U.S. Soccer Federation hire a law firm and then not pay attention to what they were doing? I know I'm not an expert in law, but if that's how these things work, maybe we need to look at how these things work.
I mean, I love the apologies. I'm sorry for us being sexist. And the next time we're sexist, we won't use such severely sexist language.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty much what he said. And I've never seen anything like this in sports where someone who is being sued apologizes. You know, it's fascinating on one hand, but it's bizarre.
I mean, I think U.S. soccer knew exactly what was in those filings, and they're only walking it back because, frankly, their sponsors spoke up. Like, Coca-Cola and Visa both came out with statements against the language in the filing. And frankly, those sponsors only spoke up because they know fans won't buy stuff from companies that support organizations that use sexist and misogynistic language.
This is a bad look. This is just is beyond anything I've ever seen of this type of stubbornness in a way. Like, there's not even a meaningful effort to work together because, like Mike said, the language here is really, really bad. And it was intentional, as we know from Carly Lloyd's deposition, because they talked about this and those transcripts are available.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Toronto-based sports writer Shireen Ahmed, who also co-hosts the Burn It All Down podcast, and Mike Pesca, host of the Daily Slate podcast, The Gist. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
70 years ago this week, 12 members of the Czechoslovak national hockey team were arrested and charged with treason.
Word had come down from higher authorities that they were an anti-state element. And in a communist state in communist Czechoslovakia, this was a high crime.
That story's coming up on Only a Game from NPR.